This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant. Oh, sorry.
Kevin Durant. You're Kevin Durant, mate. Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Dunk.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is host Andrew Schleck, and with me, Brett Dawson of NewsOK.com. Brett, how's it going, man?
It's great, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad you could come on. So the last two games have been great. We had a podcast on Friday, and it was like doom and gloom. I was giving out like all the worst stats in the world, and the Thunder have turned it around, I think, mostly because Russell Westbrook just went Nova. Over the past two games, he's gone 80 points, 17 rebounds, and 20 assists, which is just kind of insane. But what other changes have the Thunder made in the past two games, Brett?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things, it seems like. And I haven't crunched all the numbers on some of the on-off stuff and looking at exactly what Victor Oladipo's rotation was in terms of playing with second unit guys. One thing, you know, Billy Donovan said the other day, if they're going to be a really good team, Russell can't be Superman all the time and come in and save them. And that is exactly what has happened in the last two games. I mean, like, he has come in and saved them, but they've gotten him in position to do that. And that's been important. I think Oladipo was particularly good on Sunday. I thought he was really good at both ends. I thought Robertson obviously was really good at both ends. Much better than he's been. He's always pretty good defensively, but much, much better offensively. I think they figured some things out with him for now that work in terms of getting him moving and not having him park in the corner so much. And I think they've been reasonably good defensively. I think they had two pretty good defensive games. And what they did more than anything else against Portland is that they have not been doing is just kept their heads above water when Russ was off the floor. I mean, I think the three games without Kanter before that, I think there are four games or whatever it was, I think their offensive rating in that range was like 72 without Russ on the floor. And I got to 90 on Sunday, which is, you know, it's manageable. You're going to have him off the floor so few minutes that 90 isn't going to crush you. 72 can crush you over the course of 15 minutes. You can get a lot of damage done in 15 minutes with him off the floor if you're going to be doing that offensively.
Yeah, and Billy seems to have figured some stuff out. And I think the thing he figured out most is he's going to play Stephen Adams a lot more. Against the Grizzlies, he played 44 minutes. And then yesterday afternoon, he played 37 minutes. And so he's been playing a lot more with the second unit guys. He's basically primarily just been like a tandem with Russ all season. Like, there are very few minutes that he's played without Westbrook. And that number's starting to go up. So that helps a lot. Finding like Robertson with some offensive purpose has been helpful. He's been slashing a lot more. He's been, obviously, he's really good on the fast break. And if you kind of look at his shot chart, it's all in the paint. And he had that dunk yesterday that just like came out of nowhere. That was just amazing. I couldn't believe
his,
it.
I think he said it was, he at first said it might have been his best dunk since college. Yeah. And then I think he amended that to there was one, I can't remember what dunk he talked about because I haven't been around here and I don't remember it and I can't remember who was involved. Maybe Anderson Varejao was involved. I can't remember, but there was like another player involved with that one. But he said maybe his best dunk since college.
I agree. I think mostly because I was so surprised. Like, he's got that athleticism, I feel like he's such a confidence guy. I mean, like yesterday he was clearly very confident and his abilities, but I mean, sometimes that's just completely gone, and that kills the Thunder offense. But when he's confident and cutting and willing to make moves like that, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, I think what's funny, the dunk was so impressive, but he had a crazy layup that I think might have been his most impressive finish, just because I didn't think it was going to go in. It was kind of a further out kind of thing at attacking the rim. It was really a play that we haven't seen him make a whole lot. And I do think it's been good. Billy Donovan said after, I think it was the Memphis game, that they tried to get him on a cut on the very first play and Memphis took it away and they didn't get that. But they did get some other stuff with him doing that later. And that's exactly to what you just said. I think it's a confidence thing with him and they wanted to get him going a little bit. And he said that was more Robertson than anything, this commitment to kind of moving. But they do want to get it happening a little bit more. because, you know, Eric Horn and I talked about this last week on our podcast or on Thunder Thursday or on one of the many products you can find at newsok.com. That when he stands in the corner, particularly when he's shooting the ball the way he is now, it's just, you know, there's just no value to him offensively, mm-hmm. because he gets an ocean of space and it creates there's all this defense packed in the middle. There's nowhere for anybody to kind of move, and there's just this island of space around him. And so just getting him on the move and not having him stand in one spot and miss jumpers is a huge thing for them offensively, I think.
Yeah, no question. And he's one of the Thunder's best players right now, and that's maybe more an indictment on the Thunder's roster than anything, but he's one of their best players. He's obviously their best defender. And whenever he can't play because of his offense, that kills the team. But he's seems to have turned that around a little bit over the past two games. And I was looking at lineup data this morning, and I found this kind of surprising. These are for five-man lineups. He's in the best three-point shooting lineups for the Thunder, which I found really surprising that he's on the court for those. Some of them are small samples. Some of them are small samples, like Russ. This lineup shooting 50% from three, and it's only on 12 attempts, so it's not much. But Westbrook, Sabonis, Robertson, Grant, and Adams. I was like, that makes no sense that they're shooting 50%. But he doesn't have to kill your offense, I guess. But he's got to be moving. He's got to be setting screens. And Fred Cass talked about this, and it's always been kind of one of my pet peeves, is why don't the Thunder set more, you know, off-ball screens and get more actions going? The Thunder didn't do that with Scott Brooks, and they don't really seem to do it much with Billy Donovan. And, you know, Vantage tracks all those stats, and the Thunder are always very low in the amount of screens set. I don't know the rationale, and I wish the Thunder would do that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially for, you know, kind of creating. Billy Donovan always talks about ball movement and player movement, and setting some off the ball screens helps in terms of that player movement and freeing some things up there. That's an interesting question, and I'm sure that Billy has addressed that at some point over the last 2 years. I don't remember if he has talked about it this year, but I'm sure it's been asked.
Yeah, I don't either. The stat last year that was always really crazy for me is that last season, I think it was like in February or March, at that point in the season, Steph Curry had set 700 off-ball screens, and Russ had set like 60.
Yeah, that's amazing. Which is, I like the idea of Robertson setting some screens. I like that they do a little bit of they can even do a little bit of pick and roll with him. It's sort of an interesting twist with him as that kind of small ball four. He likes that role, he said. You know, he enjoys kind of doing that. And what he talked about yesterday was also, when he's playing that position, it frees him up a little bit to just go get rebounds, which is something he's really good at. He did that obviously yesterday a lot against Portland. Mm-hmm. Had some opportunities at that spot to go get some boards, and really, really, I mean, even when he was playing small forward at the beginning, was very much attacking the glass.
Yeah, and Billy's shown his willingness to play him at the four, at least during the stretch when Kaner's out, which is kind of nice to see, because I always think of him, I mean, he's more of a four as an offensive player. Obviously, defensively, he can guard whoever you want him to, but I'd like to see him continue to get looks there. I want to thank Chicken Express for sponsoring today's show. They're special right now. You can get two meals that includes four tenders, a side and a drink for only $9.99. Great deal. Chicken Express has a ton of locations in Oklahoma City, two in Edmond, Yukon, Moore, Mustang, Norman, Chickasha. Great locations, great food. Go check out Chicken Express this week. Grab yourself a sweet tea and get some chicken strips that are just delicious. And back to the podcast with Brett Dawson. My next question for you is Jeremy Grant overrated? He seems to be the guy, anytime that I flip on the radio, and these aren't like the greatest people to listen to about Thunder analysis, but they're like, why doesn't Jeremy Grant just start? Jeremy Grant should play 30 minutes a night. Jeremy Grant. I understand, like, he's got a really great physical profile. He's been hitting his threes this season, which has been a pleasant surprise. But some of these numbers are just a little bit disappointing. Sorry, that was my
phone. That's a festive tune you got going on.
Thank you. It's a Caribbean theme. I try to take myself to the Caribbean anytime I get a phone call. Some on-off numbers for him. When he's on the court, the Thunder are a -7.4. And when he's on the court, it's a -7.4. When he's off, the Thunder are a +5.2. And then the defensive rating when he's on the court is a 109. And when he's off the court, it's a 101.9. And I like what Jeremy Grant does. I think the shot blocking is great. I think the dunks are great. I think the threes are great. But the data says that he's not really helping the Thunder all that much. Do you think that he's overrated?
That's interesting. He's a weird guy to think of as overrated, but you're right in the sense that there are so many people. Barry Trammell at our place is a guy who is sort of a proponent of a starting lineup change, or at least was last week, and that was the lineup change that he suggested. Now, I think there's a couple of things that can be – there's some noise maybe in some numbers with him, as there is with – I think with literally any Thunder player who spends a lot of his time on the court without Westbrook.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly – you know, I want to look at Westbrook numbers and like on-off Westbrook numbers with Grant and know what that's in. But I do think – here's one thing, and this is complete spitballing. This is coming up with this off the top of my head because I'm just now being presented with these Jeremy Grant numbers. They're new to me. But, like, one thing I wonder about is how much of the time that he's on the floor is he spending – defending some of the guys that Roberson defends. And maybe one of those things is that there's a gap defensively between those two guys. He's guarding some of the better wing players sometimes, you know, like it was funny. I talked to his dad last week and I was, his dad Harvey was at a couple of games.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, like I was talking about his defensive versatility. I said, you know, sometimes they can throw him on up. They've had him guard fives. Sometimes he might guard LeBron and his dad said he tries to guard LeBron. he's not going to let the kid get too full of himself. But I mean, he does have difficult defensive assignments that might have something to do with it. It is interesting though, because I think the dreaded eye test makes it seem like they're better when he's playing. And I think it's partially because he's been such a surprise compared to expectations. I think he's been much better than people thought he was going to be because for one, just nobody thought he would stretch the floor like this. Nobody thought he was going to shoot the ball this way. But I think the potential looks really good there. You see all these things he could do. His dad wants him to develop a post game offensively. That's something they don't really talk about much. I think what they'd rather see is some of this in between stuff, his ability to put the ball on the floor, maybe finish there, maybe someday get a call. That's never happened yet, that he gets a call when he drives.
Yeah.
I think because he's so like kind of discombobulated when he does it, I think it probably hurts it.
Yeah.
But those numbers are really interesting to me. And I was not aware of that. I hadn't looked at his on off. And that's interesting because it certainly doesn't speak to what I think people think when they watch the team. And it's also interesting that, you know, they played pretty well against Portland. Not great, but they played pretty well. And he played very little. They didn't use him a lot. And they're still in the process now of figuring out post-Canada rotations. And I think that's why you're going to see some weirdness where he doesn't play a lot, where they had Abrines available yesterday and chose not to play him because it's still a work in progress. And they seem to figure out a few things yesterday. So that's going to lead to some more kind of tweaking, I think, of who plays when and with whom.
Yeah. And I don't know. A lot of people see Grant as like a Roberson replacement. And I don't see it because he can't guard point guards and he can't really guard shooting guards. And I think people would be really disappointed if that's the Roberson replacement.
No, and I've had a lot of people suggest to me, not only suggest that he start, which is very, very common, as I said, even Barry. But when Barry suggests it, he suggests it for Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you have to go. Grant is not a full-time wing, and he's not going to be that in his career. I mean, that's just not who he is. I think he is a small ball power forward who can do some, you know, you've got some guys like a LeBron, and again, he doesn't, it's not like he puts up a great deal of resistance against LeBron, but you've got some of those big wing players who are physical and you know, have a sort of diverse game, and he can defend some of those guys. But I mean, you know, they've used him at four, they've used him at five. He's a small ball front court guy. I don't ever see him transitioning, you know, the 3-point shooting notwithstanding, I don't see him ever transitioning into a guy who's a wing player, even, you know, 75% of the time on the floor.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Interesting. Another interesting Grant number. So as a 2-man lineup with Russ and Grant, they're a minus 42. And
wow.
And then as a 2-man lineup with Russ and Roberson, they're a plus 93.
Wow. That's remarkable. You know, again, you got to think about what's in those numbers, but that is a fascinating pair of numbers.
Yeah. And yeah, it's extremely noisy. I don't just take that as like Grant is like the worst player ever.
Right.
I think he's just developing. Like, he's still 22 years old. I think there's been some flashes there, but the numbers just aren't that kind to him. And, you know, I think that Robertson should be traded from the Thunder. I think that they need to go get a wing. And obviously, like, you're just not just trading out Robertson for Grantsman. It's like you have to go get another wing if you're trading away Andre Robertson. But Grant, I think Grant, to me, is more of an indictment on what the Thunder think of Josh Huestis than what they think about Andre Robertson. I don't know what you think about that.
That's probably true. I mean, Huestis, Billy Donovan talked about this again this week, and it's the thing he just constantly goes back to, is just the difference in guarding pick and roll as a power forward versus a wing player, mm-hmm. What your responsibilities are, and that Huestis is really, he's making that transition from being more of a power forward as a college player to trying to make that transition in the NBA. And what Donovan doesn't say, because Donovan doesn't really say these things, is that that transition is really hard and he's not doing it well enough. I mean, like, that's got to be the answer, right? Like, we don't know, we don't see it. But the answer has to, if he keeps bringing up this is why he doesn't play, is because he's making this transition. What he's not saying there is he's not making that transition well. And I think everybody knows he has some things he can do offensively. But, you know, I think people get a little excited about the minutes he gets that are not real meaningful. I mean, the only minutes he's gotten this year were utterly meaningless. You know, there's nothing to those minutes. And so I think, and it's also hard to judge. You know, as I once had somebody tell me, as a scout once told me about the, you know, you look at his D-League stats and they're nice. And a scout once told me everybody in the D-League averages 15 points. You know, it's not literally true, but it's almost true. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, D-League stats, you know, if D-League stats a whole lot, Dakari Johnson would not be toiling in the D-League. Right. There's a lot more to it than just what numbers a guy puts up in the D-League, and that the caliber of defense there is, you know, obviously vastly different. And so, yeah, I don't think that there's been no indication. There's been no reason to believe that they feel like Josh Huestis is a big part of this thing going forward, because, you know, they'd play him some, you know, that they don't play him over Kyle Singler. Right. They're just, it's just, I think we're at the stage where it's pretty clear that at least in the short term, that's not a thing. Like, Josh Huestis is not going to be a piece.
Yeah. Which I guess is a little disappointing just because he was a first round pick. But, yeah, the signal of a bottom five player in Kyle Singler not or getting minutes over him is very loud, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, and look, you know, the one thing I will say about Billy is that rotations change a lot. He'll you know, guys will kind of go away for a period of time, and then they'll come back, and we saw that with Anthony Morrow, who just, you know, just went through a stretch where he didn't play. But the thing with Huestis is he just hasn't had that stretch where he does. There just hasn't been that period of time where they've even sort of given it an experimental look.
Yeah. So switching gears to Domantas Sabonis, you wrote a nice piece on him at newsok.com. You guys should all go check it out. Basically, he's just a super nice dude, and he's really been good for the team off the court. On the court lately, he's just been really up and down, which is what rookies do, at least 20-year-old rookies, that's what they do. What are your thoughts on his game moving forward? Do you see them changing the starting lineup? I don't see that happening, but do you see that potentially happening, or do you think that he's like the starter moving forward for OKC?
I think he's going to start probably for the rest of the season. I mean, barring any kind of weird injury situation where not just him getting hurt, but something else happening that would necessitate them making some kind of change. Or if there were a situation where if he got so good with the second unit, and we're a long way from this happening, I'm not suggesting this is going to happen anytime soon. If he got so good with the second unit that you could do with him a lot of the things that you do with Kanter, then that might change their view of playing him with that group and sort of featuring him. In that setting, you know, saying like, we're going to make you the Enes Kanter of our second unit now. But I don't think that's going to happen because offensively that's not where he is. He's not a guy that consistently draws a double team. He's not nearly the kind of finisher around the rim that Kanter is. He's a long way from that in terms of his development. But I do think there's a couple of things about him. One, they really like that he's a ball mover. And that's one of the things they liked about him from the very beginning, that he's not a guy who needs the ball a lot. And he's not a guy who demands and commands a lot of shots. He's going to be in that position to move the ball. And I think they'd still like to see more of that, more of his passing. I think, you know, that's one of the things Billy Donovan's talked about a lot, is having him not be just a stretch four, having him put the ball on the floor a little bit, having him post a little bit. What we've seen is that stretch four, even though that's not what he played in college, was a real natural progression for him, because it's not easy, but it's relatively easy. Stand in a spot, set some screens, get some open threes. As they've tried to have him do a little more, I think that's been harder. The stuff he's being asked to do is harder to do. It's just, it's harder to put the ball on the floor. It's harder to score in the post. And so I think he struggled a little bit. But I think with him, there is some confidence stuff. I think they feel like he is a guy. Russell Westbrook said this the other day. I was talking to him about Domas, and he brought it up, and Donovan has brought it up before. He's really self-critical. He's very hard on himself. And so Westbrook, who is not a guy who is shy about being hard on his teammates, obviously, does, I think, treat him a little differently. And he said as much. You know, he said, you just don't want to be too hard on him because he's so hard on himself. He doesn't need you to be hard on him. And if you do it, it's almost like piling on, I think, in some ways, because they know how he already feels. So I think that it's weird to say about an NBA, like a professional basketball player at the highest level, that, oh, like they don't want to damage his confidence.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to that with him in particular. And so I don't think they'll make that change. If there was a real obvious change, like we talked about Grant, Grant's a fine player, but I don't think you look at Grant and say, well, that fixes everything that they have going wrong in their starting lineup. And I don't think there is a change. You know, they've got a roster. We've seen it. It's got holes in it, and they don't have real obvious plugins. They don't have real obvious things that fix what problems they have.
Yeah.
That was a long answer. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. That Russ anecdote is really interesting because it kind of – that's very counter to what, like, the national perspective of Westbrook is. Andrew Sharp, I don't know if you listen to the Open Floor podcast, but he – this past week, I know that he was probably just – he probably regrets saying this. At least I hope he does. He's just talking about how Westbrook is detrimental to your team, and he said he wouldn't even take Westbrook over John Wall on the Wizards, and he doesn't think that Westbrook's a top five player. And obviously all that just makes no sense to me. But he acted like he was like detrimental to like other players on the team, and I think that anecdote like speaks to the fact that that's really not true.
Yeah, I'm a big John Wall fan, and that's crazy to me. I think Wall's really good, but like that idea is like if you want to swap those two guys out, I think you would. I don't think either team would be thrilled with. I mean, I think the Wizards would be much more thrilled with what happened. I think that would be a bad swap out for the Thunder. And I think Wall is great and deserves to be an All Star and is having a fantastic year and should really be in the MVP conversation. Not as one of the leading guys with a real chance, but he's been fantastic. But Westbrook is way better than he is. He's just a way better player. And I think, too, I think what is interesting about Westbrook is that he does have a real he has a real awareness of things like that, you know, things like that about Domas, things about his personality that I don't know if he gets a lot of credit for because I think he's viewed as a guy. To me, I think the outside perspective is he's a guy who just goes off on everybody if things aren't going his way. So much so that I think at one point there was a game, the Golden State game, when, I think, you know, Sam Amick, who I like a lot, said that when Russ walked with the ball, you know, like cradled the ball and walked like 85 feet with it or whatever, said that he was like pointing to his head, like yelling at his teammates, like you have to think. And that's not at all what he was doing. Not at all. He was saying, I can't believe I spaced out like that. Where is my pit?
Yeah.
But I think the perception of Russell that he's so hard on everybody else kind of carried, you know, sort of bled into what people saw when they looked at that. But I don't think he's like that at all. He's hard on some guys. And I think sometimes it's because, you know, he's trying to get the best out of guys or whatever. But then you take a situation like that one with Sabonis where he, I think, understands that this guy's already going to do this to himself. He already knows what you might need to point out to him what he needs to do better, but he already knows it was wrong and he already feels bad enough about it. So you don't want to pile on. I think that's a great understanding. And one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had about being a point guard was with John Wall, who told me all these things about a point guard's responsibilities that I never thought of, including like just having a counter in your head of we've had five trips and so-and-so hasn't had the ball in five trips and I need to get him the ball now because it's been X amount of time. And I think that understanding of your teammates and their personalities and what they can and can't take from you and all that stuff, I think that's all part of it. I think Westbrook's good at all that stuff.
Yeah. Totally agree. Let's move on to some Twitter questions. This is from Austin S1027. He asks, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is the 2017 first round pick?
5, because it's what I always say when somebody asks me a 10 question, because I don't know how to quantify things from 1 to 10. Like, it particularly, like there are certain things you can quantify. If they had the number 1 pick, it would be a 10. It would be a 10 to get that right, to make sure that you got the right piece. but we don't know where they're going to draft, and we don't know who exactly is going to be in the draft. We have a sense. But right now, I think they would draft 19th. So, you know, I'm not going to say that you would put a 10 importance on a player that you drafted 19th. That's such a hit or miss position in the draft. And really, any more in the NBA draft, you're going to get some can't miss type prospects. But because I think guys are so young who are in the draft, it's hard. It's hard to know what you're getting when you get it. And I think there are some, there's a very limited number of can't miss prospects. So, you know, when you draft at that low a position, you know, it would be great if they get a really good player. They obviously have needs. I mean, if they could get, you know, depending on how the rest of the season goes, maybe they want to look at a backup point guard. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think they want to look at scoring on the wing. But, you know, the other thing is that, like, guess what? Everybody else wants in the NBA. They want point guards and wings.
Yeah. Yeah. And Caleb underscore Jones underscore asked, should they target a wing or a point guard? We kind of talked about this before we started the podcast, that, and he mentions that there's this draft is particularly deep with point guards, but when you look at the draft board, like you go to Draft Express, it seems like they're deep with point guards up until like pick 10.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on whether you consider Malik Monk at Kentucky a point guard, and I wouldn't, but they list him as kind of a combo guard, point guard, shooting guard. Depending on how you view that, there's six in the top 10. Monk is one of the top 10 guys. So there's either five or six point guards in the top 10. So, you know, point guard has taken a hit by the time you get to 18, 19, wherever they end up drafting. And then there's also five small forwards off the board by that point on Draft Express, which is Draft Express is what I typically use for this stuff. So, you know, that's they're talking about of 17 teams or whatever drafting ahead of you, 11 would be taking guys at the positions that you're targeting. No matter how deep a draft is, once five and six guys are gone from a position, there's a limit to just how deep it can be.
Yeah, and I think a guy that, if he stays in the draft, this guy would be really interesting, and he seems to kind of fit the quote-unquote Thunder profile.
I'm fascinated to hear if you say a guy that Eric, there's a guy Eric and I talk about a lot.
OG Anunoby?
Yep, that's him. That's the one.
So he tore his ACL, and he's out for the season. But if he stays in the draft, he'll fall around Thunder range, and I really like him as a Thunder player.
Yep, he's a really interesting guy for them. He's very long. He's a really good and versatile defender. And I think he'll score some. The question is, you know, is he going to be a big-time scorer in the NBA? Hard to say, but I think you could gamble on his athleticism. At his age, he's 19, you know, 19 to be a second year guy is in college is good. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he very much to me, and like from the day I got here, Eric Horn talked about this, just is one of those guys that like looks like a Thunder guy. He just, he carries himself that way. He defends that way. He's so athletic. Just all the kinds of things that they seem to target, you know, and, you know, people hate you for saying this sometimes, but like for all his foibles and faults, like Tom Crean has done a nice job developing NBA talent there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right about that. And you know, he's like an Andre Robertson replacement. Like,
yeah.
So he could slide right in if they trade Robertson or if they let him walk or whatever. He's not a good shooter, but he's been a better shooter than Robertson was in college. I think Robertson was like 24% from three at Colorado, and OG's at least 31%, which is not great, especially from college range. But, you know, I really like him. He's a guy that I would target. Other than that, Tyler Lydon, I don't know how you say it, who plays for Syracuse, is a kind of a combo 3-4 guy that can shoot it. That they might look at.
That's one of the guys. I think that's where Draft Express. I think that's who Draft Express has right now on their like at 19 on their board. That's who they if they have the Thunder at 19 taking him. Interestingly, right below him is Bam Adebayo, who they have 20th. Who I don't think really fits in terms of like you don't really need a power forward, but you talk about an athletic guy who's like, you know, fits the mold in terms of being young and athletic and the sort of things they target. He's fascinating, but you know, I don't think you're if you're taking a power forward in this draft, it's because you've gotten to a best player available situation.
Yeah. I think if like a Harry Giles dropped, I think that would be really tempting.
Yeah. I think that's possible. I mean, that's a guy too, who I think like you might take the risk on, even though he's not necessarily a position of need, because, you know, who knows what he can kind of turn into. He's got, at one point, he was considered to be the best guy out of all these guys in this freshman class.
Right. And that kind of scares you a little bit, because the Thunder have selected a guy like that in Perry Jones, mm-hmm. who's kind of dropped off the map once they actually started playing basketball. So it's interesting. I think the Thunder should target a wing. I think that you can find a competent backup point guard. You don't need a lot of minutes at point guard right now, because you have Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
And you can find somebody that can fill those, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game. I think that they really need a wing. They need a wing that can score. They need a wing that can be versatile. And they just don't have it right now. So I think that the draft is important in that. I also think they could use the draft to, you know, make a trade or an upgrade. You know, maybe a deal with Denver would make more sense at the draft. I don't know, but I think that they will be aggressive at the draft, and it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah. The other thing we should say about the backup point guard thing is that, you know, I think campaigns played a little better the last two games, particularly two games ago. Memphis was his best game of the year. And so, you know, I've probably been as guilty as anybody of jumping to conclusions on Cam, but it's still pretty early for a guy who missed 37 games and hasn't played a ton in his NBA career. Way too soon to write it off, say, like, they have to go get another point guard, you know, when you got a guy that young. So I think it's – wing to me is a much more pressing need, particularly if you ultimately decide, you know, that Robertson isn't part of the future.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I mentioned on the last podcast that I think that I'm afraid that he might not be a backup point guard. And people took that as like, oh, Andrew thinks that he'll never be a backup point guard. Mm-hmm. His play has been concerning. Like, if you've been watching him play since he's been back, like, he's played, he didn't even play that well yesterday. Like, he just hasn't looked that good. So,
no, I thought Memphis was good. He was good against Memphis.
Yes.
And surely, you know, motivated, it's his hometown team and all that stuff. And you'd like to see that be a little bit more consistent, not a little bit, you'd like to see it be a lot more consistent. Cause like the kind of minutes he gave you against Memphis, they didn't blow you away. They were just good. And that's what you need out of him every night. You just need good, solid minutes. And you know, when I say every night, you know what I mean? It's the NBA. So like 8 times out of 10 or whatever, but like you just need him to be a steady, consistent guy who's doing some things to get other people involved, who's not just relying on those 3-point shots, who's kind of getting into the paint a little bit, making some things happen. And we just haven't seen a ton of that yet.
Yep. Another question from @TripleDoubleVGC. He's asking, will Robertson be traded before the deadline? And then what could the Thunder fetch for him? I'm going to ask this a little bit different. What is the percentage chance that you give that Andre Robertson's on the Thunder after February
23rd? Oh, 55, 60, 70. I don't know. I think more likely than not.
Okay.
But maybe not. Maybe it's 50. That's hard to say. I really, much like 1 to 10 questions, I'm not great at percentage questions because so many things can happen between now and then. From the day that Adams and Oladipo signed, it did not feel like Robertson was long for the Thunder. Mm-hmm. And by long, I don't mean this season. I mean long term beyond this season. And so, you know, and that's not necessarily the case. There's, you know, any number of things can happen, but they don't tend to, I don't think, want to mess around with restricted free agency a whole lot. So, you know, maybe there's a greater chance than that. That's throwing out a number is, not my strong suit. So, I think the smart thing to do probably is you've got to make it to me. The smart decision is to decide before February 23rd, whether this is a piece you're going forward with. And if it's not, then you just go ahead and get it done because you have such a need there.
Yeah. I think he gets dealt.
That's a terrible answer, but I'd be just kind of, I really do not like being put on the spot on predictions. Cause I can't possibly know this. You know, I'm not good at knowing this.
Yeah. I mean, these are all guesses. I would guess that he's gone just because like what you mentioned with the restricted free agency stuff, like Presti, he didn't like his guys to get there. He can't control what kind of contract they're going to get. And you can watch him go for nothing. I'd rather them get even like a late first round pick for him. Obviously like a Wilson Chandler, with, you know, Robertson being a part of that trade, I think makes a ton of sense for OKC. But I don't know. Something like that makes a ton of sense. And I think that he's definitely a player that helps the Thunder right now. I mean, all the numbers back it up. Defense when he's on the court is 102. When he's off, it's 108. I mean, he is the best defender on the Thunder next to Steven Adams, and he's very helpful. But if the Thunder can find a replacement wing and use Robertson, you know, as a trade chip, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it's as good as he is defensively. And once again, I say he is really good defensively. Like, people need to stop focusing on his bad defensive games, because Russell Westbrook has bad offensive games. It just happens. He just, you know, you're not, when you defend the caliber of guy that Robertson defends night in and night out, you will have games where you really struggle. That's going to happen. It's just a fact of NBA life. But he's a really, really good defender. Now, like, is he good enough offensively to offset, you know, I've had people tell me he's so bad offensively that it doesn't merit playing him at all, no matter how good defensively he is. And that's absurd. You know, that's just a ridiculous notion.
Yeah.
Is he a net positive or a net negative? I think he's marginally a net positive because he's so good defensively. But, you know, he plays a position where you typically get scoring on a team that doesn't score a lot, that struggles to score. So that's where, you know, I think he's much more valuable to a team that has scoring on the wings, that can use him situationally or play him alongside a big time wing scorer, than he would be here. And so I think he's got trade value. I just don't know that he's necessarily the long-term fit here because of the way you're constructed. I just think you need a guy who scores there.
Yeah, totally agree. Great player, not a great fit with OKC. That's why I like the Denver fit, and I'll probably be saying that to myself until the trade deadline passes and still say it afterwards, because I don't know that Denver will ever do a deal.
Yeah, Denver has a lot of wings, and I think they've got some more offensive-minded guys and, you know, maybe could use a guy like him.
Yeah, Chandler, Barton. I mean, they've got all these guys that kind of do the same thing. I know that Will Barton and Wilson Chandler are different players, but they will serve the same purpose. And why don't we just give you Robertson? Because they have no wing defenders. None of those guys are defenders. So I think that's why that makes sense. Brett, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at @BDawsonWrites. We can also read all your stuff at newsok.com, listen to you on the Thunder Buddies podcast. And anything else,
Brett? Watch us every Thunder Thursday on NewsOK.com. Watch at 2 o'clock on Thursdays. We sit around a table. It's real professional-like. And, you know, it's like our own little sports center.